Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, everybody, Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden. We're here in Colorado. We just survived a major storm and the sun is out, so all is good. This is the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up.
That's right. Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. It was easy for Chuck. I will just say, Chuck pulls the, my back, my
back,
European grief. Whatever it snows.
Got me out of Vietnam, and get me out of this.
And snow. So I'm the main snower here. Hey, tons of stuff to talk about today. The Fannie Willis case. Tom Bjorklund and Darcy Schoenig have filed a complaint. I'm trying to punish Jenna Griswold for all of her corruption. I know I'm not holding my breath there. But why don't I start out with Ash in America? She's got her own podcast. She writes for the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. Everybody knows who Ash is. And wanted to talk to her two things about January 6th, the Republicans' January 6th committee, because Ash, you've been doing great work on that, kind of keeping track of it all. I guess I should say, first off, welcome to the show. And thank you.
Thanks for having me.
But I wanted to start off with talking a little bit about Kent Buck. He abruptly...
Our favorite guy.
Our favorite. Like, I think, you know, one of the most hated Republicans in Colorado.
Ever.
He's earned it.
Oh, he has. Every time you think Kent Buck can't...
Is it a new low? No, it's a false floor. And he plunges deeper.
And so this time, and we talked about it a little bit on Wednesday, he is resigning like next Friday, which throws the CD4 race sort of into chaos. And I believe, and a lot of people believe, he's doing that largely to hurt Lauren Boebert because she can't really run in the special election and indeed has said she won't. And we have some folks who say they think it's to help Rhino Jerry Sonnenberg. But Dan Bongino, and Ash, I'm going to play the soundbite and then get your take on this, noted that Ken Buck in an interview with Axios and Newsweek said that there are some other
rhinos
who are going to step down early, possibly then handing control of the House over to Democrats. If we could please play the Dan Bongino bite number one.
Wouldn't that be interesting if right before a presidential election, where a group of never Trump Republicans who hate Donald Trump strategically leave their seats in Congress to make sure Speaker Hakeem Jeffries, a radical far-left Democrat, gets one of these. What is this for those listening on audio? Joe, what am I holding up here? Yes, a gavel.
It's a gravel, yeah.
Gravel. Your head will be gravel after he gets the gavel. He gets the gavel. Wouldn't that be fascinating? All of the investigations right before the election that are being run by House Judiciary and elsewhere. Remember, the chair of those committees would change as the Democrats took back the majority. Oh, that's a conspiracy theory. I'm just listening to what Ken Buck's saying, folks. Did he not say it? It's in Newsweek. So apparently he knows what it, either Ken Buck's a liar or Ken Buck is telling you the truth. And there are three more Republican goons getting ready to leave, which could throw the House into complete turmoil. And you could have Speaker Jeffries throwing out all these elections, throwing out all these cases against the Bidens right before the November election as the chair of each committee changes. Oh, that's right. You're not hearing that elsewhere.
So I don't know. Actually, I mean, I hadn't even thought of that. What do you think?
Well, I called Chuck about this the other day. We talked on the phone about this. So what is the most important thing to the uniparty in Congress right now? It's passing money for Ukraine. They desperately want to feed a whole new check into their money laundering machine. And I personally think that Ken Buck's move, and I wouldn't be surprised if there were three more. I wouldn't be surprised if Doug Lamborn is one of them.
Yeah.
That they are punishing Johnson and, you know, preventing this, they want their money passed, and
right.
he's standing in between them and the national security supplemental and all of the funding for Ukraine, and not just Ukraine, by the way, because there's money for Israel in that. There's money for Sudan and Taiwan and yeah, it's a fever dream for
Senator
the military
Menendez,
industrial complex.
Senator
yeah.
Not for Americans,
but.
And the military industrial complex has their hooks in a lot of politicians and a lot of Colorado politicians. And to me, that's the most likely. You know, I think there multiple things can be true and there can be right. many reasons for this. And certainly it does throw a wrench in the election. But I believe that this is much more about their billions and billions of dollars for their lobbyists and forcing Johnson's hand.
Well,
Johnson's already agreed to give them what they want. He said he's going to have two different bills, one for Ukraine, one for Israel. He'll get it through an emergency procedure that needs Democrats to approve it. So they'll get their billions on billions on billions anyway. You know, there was some thought that they'd want to kind of do something about the border, but
it's not really that important.
No. Especially with Haiti needing our help.
Haiti with the barbecue running the country.
Hey, I'm telling you, I believe that Prime Minister Barbecue would be preferable to what we have now running DC. And, you know, I think we could lobby him to eat the right people and it could work in our favor.
Bill Gates would be all for that, right? But, you know, as you said, I think there are multiple things that could be true. I think if you're right that, and I'd be curious as to who came up with this. I think it probably, if it hurts Lauren Boebert, and I think it could, then not only does Buck get out to do all of the awful things that, you know, you and Dan Bongino are talking about, but then we send another rhino to Congress. So somebody to thwart Trump should he win in Congress. And I think the fact that he didn't call Mike Johnson to even tell him, he said, I left him a voicemail. You don't text? Give me a freaking break, Ken Buck. He's like, I leave a voicemail when I don't want to talk to the person, right? And he left it a half an hour ahead of time, right? It's kind of like, but I think one of the things I wanted to talk about, because not just Ukraine, but I also think that coming up with the election, so much stuff is coming out exonerating Donald Trump on all kinds of fronts, but particularly the January 6th. I mean, their whole thing is that he's an insurrectionist. And
he kept on asking for National Guardsmen to put down his own insurrection.
And they hid that.
Right.
Yes,
they've seen a lot of things and that's coming out. And I think they want to stop that as well. Why don't you give it? I mean, you gave the most concise and brilliant, I think, synopsis of what all of that was. So why don't you run it for our audience?
Sure. So if we go back to the district court trial and Judge Sarah Wallace, she found that Trump was guilty of insurrection, but that the 14th Amendment didn't apply to the president. Now, that was, criticized widely. That's a nice word by MAGA because, you know, how can a civil court find a criminal finding of insurrection? Insurrection is a crime. How can that stand? And, you know, I at the time took a lot of heat for saying they didn't make the case. They didn't fill the gap. They didn't. This is a civil court, which means it's 51%, which means you've got to show that something else happened. Right. Particularly when we're talking about Donald Trump. And they argued that it was political and that, you know, it shouldn't be considered. And Judge Sarah Wallace said, well, you know, it's got witnesses and evidence and stuff in it, and I'm going to consider it. And I recognize that it's political and that will come down to weight is basically what she said. And then, of course, she weighted it very heavily and said that it was, you know, factually true. Now, at the end of the day, in the Supreme Court, the argument that it was political was enough. Right. I mean, that was a big part of what they had the Supreme Court in their 9-0 opinion said is other courts may not, you know, likely would not have considered the Seamy. First of all, Professor Seamy, who was, it was thought crimes and Minority Report, what he was peddling. And Sarah Wallace, Judge Wallace, relied very heavily on his opinion, and then the J6 report. And the Supreme Court said, you know, this is, I don't think they said specifically this is hearsay, but they basically said this is hearsay. And other courts wouldn't have submitted it. So we are creating an unequal playing field, unequal treatment when it comes to who Republicans can vote for and, you know, who anybody can vote for, because Donald Trump's support also captures a pretty significant part of the middle. And so what we've seen then is election interference.
Yeah.
They knew, I believe, and I've said this since the beginning, that they knew that this wasn't going to be enough. I think most people were surprised that Judge Wallace said the 14th Amendment doesn't apply to the president. That was a surprise. And then, of course, the Supreme Court said, you know, we're all commies. Here we go.
Right.
Although the dissent in that was pretty solid. And then, of course, the Supreme Court 9-0. Even the most liberal, now I you know, thought it was either going to be 9-0 or 8-1, because Sotomayor in those arguments
right.
really appeared to be, you know, she didn't ask a lot of questions of Chris Murray, and she really hammered in on Jonathan Mitchell. But at the end of the day, it was 9-0. And I love the response now of, you know, prominent editors and journalists talking about how all of the Supreme Court justices got it wrong and they don't understand the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's why we need to get rid of them. That's why we need to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Well, I think to take it back even further, I mean, let's go, as you have pointed out previously, to the November election, right? And mm-hmm. so there was a mess there. They certainly did not want states and congressional people being able to talk about the mess and the potential, whatever you want to call it, that occurred. Irregularities, we can put it nicely. They didn't want to talk about that. So then they used January 6th to create an emergency so they didn't have to have the whole certification. And then they created, as you pointed out, the January 6th committee to cover up what they did on January 6th. And now we're finding...
And then they made sure the Republicans couldn't have people they wanted. And luckily we had Liz Cheney and
shepherded it through.
Well, Liz Cheney was appointed by Nancy Pelosi to the J6 committee. She was the vice chair, which is a position that's reserved for Democrat, for the majority party on the committee. And she was the minority party had no representation.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody in that. And they even said this in the trial court. They had, I can't think of his name, but the guy who was like the project manager of the J6 committee testified. And he basically said, we weren't looking at whether or not he committed an insurrection. We knew.
Right.
Anyway, committed an insurrection. And that's why Nancy Pelosi was off limits. All of her comms, she was where the buck stopped that day. It was all off limits in the J6 committee. You right. had Stephen Sund, the chief of Capitol Police on the day, who was set up as a scapegoat, who,
right.
You know, was they withheld. And this is premeditation because they withheld.
Oh, yeah. There was a plan. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And then you have Yogananda Pittman, who assumed his position on the day, and then whew, she's gone and out in Nancy Pelosi's district with a head of security job at Berkeley.
Right.
Or if it's not Berkeley, it's one of the universities out there. So it's so obvious, but all of the things that I just mentioned, right, the
right.
withholding of evidence, all of those things were not allowed and not looked at by the J6 committee. There was it wasn't a balanced inquiry in any way, shape or form.
And we won't even get into the whole pipe bomb makeup. But then, what's been happening lately, though, is now that the Republicans are looking into it and the Republicans are subpoenaing people, the story is falling apart, right? It needed. And not only that, but you've got Twitter and the growth of, I think, some of these, you know, your podcast, our podcast, national podcast, where people are starting to expose this. And their whole Donald Trump is an insurrectionist. Well, if you didn't have an insurrectionist, if what you really had was a coup orchestrated by the Democrats, then everything falls apart. And now.
Yeah, but now we know that Cassidy Hutchinson was telling the truth the whole time.
Yeah.
Totally honest woman. It's just so brave of her to come out with her story.
A person who said Donald Trump lunged. I mean, who even believed that, right? Lunged across. And now we found out as much as they knew, Liz Cheney, all those people knew when they were telling that story and they were parading her all over the place. They
sharing
knew that
her
was,
on.
They knew it was a lie. And
I'm shocked.
And yeah, exactly. But again, to circle back to Ken Buck. And
well, hang on a second. Let me just respond to that really quickly, because I think it's important to realize that, yes, it was political. And what they did was objectively wrong. It was biased. It was it was confirmation bias, is what that committee was used for. And the reason for that is, as you said, November 3rd was a coup. January 6th was the cover up of the coup. And the J6 committee was the cover up of the cover up. But I think where this becomes very interesting is that they put it in a court proceeding and they've relied upon it. And the Supreme Court has now looked at this, and there's I believe there's more. That's more that's going to come from that, because they decided to treat this as a statement of fact, and doesn't hold up.
Yes, I mean, you're right. To a certain extent, this is the January 6th stuff is the basis for a lot of their lawfare. And even though it may, I mean, I think the justices, they're not operating in a vacuum, right? I mean, unless they're in Fulton County, and we'll get into that later. But they're not operating in a vacuum. And so they're hearing that what the Democrats have been shoving down our throats as a factual basis is not even is it political. It's just flat out a lie sometimes. And I think so that goes away. Well, now it doesn't matter. Did Donald Trump, did he have immunity? Well, if there was no insurrection, if it was all a Democrat plot, he doesn't, you know, I mean, it all falls apart. And now circling back around to Ken Buck. And for this, I'm going to play, let me play the second Dan Bongino pie, because he kind of goes into it a little bit more. Is this now, since their lawfare thing is falling apart, is this just a way to get rid of the Republican investigation? And Thomas, if we could please play Bongino number two.
Ken Buck is screwing you over like you have no idea. And the thing everyone should be asking right now is, does somebody have something on these guys? I don't know about Ken Buck, but these other people he says are thinking about leaving? Is there some kind of like honeypot operation going on or something? Because this is awfully weird that they can't have Trump in office and all of a sudden the House is a hair's length away from flipping a Hakeem Jeffries, who will destroy every investigation into Biden crime family, and on the certification day would be controlling the House again, just like Pelosi did on January 6th. Nobody thinks this is a little weird?
It is. I mean, first of all, let's break that down. Ken Buck is screwing you over like you wouldn't believe. Well, we are in Colorado. Yeah,
we believe it.
We believe it, and we're used to it.
Yeah, we're used to it.
It's like
everyday stuff for us.
Ash, you raise an interesting point. We'll have to start calling around and seeing if Doug Lamborn.
Oh yeah, yeah,
might, because he'd be perfect to do it, right?
I mean, he's already resigned, right? He's not running again, and so he seems like a shoo-in for one of the three to me.
Right.
You know, especially because my theory is that it's kind of the military industrial complex that's driving this change. So,
well, you're right. And that's the thing when you think about it. And the more you look at this and, you know, you're like, no, that can't be true. But Dan Bongino's like, I don't know what, why, right? I
mean, you can no longer say that anymore. You're like, that can't be true.
It doesn't compute for me. It accomplishes so many things. It screws over Lauren Boebert, who they hate, right? It sets up, just for going to Congress the next time, a possible rhino who will then thwart Trump should Trump win. But even bigger than that, it allows them to get rid of all these Republicans coming up with the truth and asking questions and things like that all the way through the election, right? And it hands the power back to the Democrats. And does anyone think for a second, well, it goes to my, with the military industrial complex, I guess it's like, who sort of thought of this, right? If you're them, Ukraine isn't going anywhere. It could get worse if Trump gets in. So you need to get your money now. I mean, what you're saying makes total sense, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think that they're the, so I watched the White House press conferences and, you know, read the White House briefing room. I look at what hearings are happening in the House and Senate and the federal each week. And I try to keep track of what's going on in Colorado as well. But all signs point to they really want that foreign aid money. They really, really want it. It's
really,
their number one. It's
really
their number
it. Really,
one.
Really.
They really, really want it. And the fact that they haven't been able to secure it to the level that they wanted, and now we're seeing the Republicans really show their colors. It's a uniparty,
right,
guys? Hey, guess what? It's a uniparty, and we've been saying that. Well, and now they're showing you exactly just how far that goes.
Exactly how they go. And you got to wonder too what they're holding over. I mean, maybe you're right. There's bargaining going on now. Maybe Doug Lamborn, you know, we're saying that he hasn't said anything, but they go to Mike Johnson and they're like, "You want these guys to resign? You want to be speaker, or don't you want to be speaker?"
Well, he already answered that. He's going to give them their way.
He's like, "Let's give us the Ukraine money," which, as we know,
their money to save democracy.
To save democracy, thank God. So,
and kill all those Ukrainians.
You know, it's kind of makes me feel sad on Party Friday, Ash.
Oh, come on, Julie. It's a party.
Well, can I interest you in what I believe to be some good news?
Yes,
okay, sure.
Please.
I think that the decision today in the Fannie Willis disqualification hearing is good news.
Okay.
Why
so, and I was very surprised to watch all of the conservative movement lose their minds over it. There was no, I don't think that there was any it was ever on the table that the judge was going to throw out the case. Right.
No,
that wasn't.
He's going to move the prosecution. So you can't try it. Then it goes to this panel of prosecutors and they may never issue one.
But see, I think we should let Ash go on because I think Ash is going to say what I think. So.
Okay. So go ahead.
Fannie Willis had trouble finding a prosecutor to begin with. That's been a big part of her story. She went to several people. She offered it to the former governor. He said no. She ended up having to hire Wade because nobody else would do it. So it's a stinker of a case to begin with. But my co-host on Why We Vote, which is tonight at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 our time on Badlands, we do a show on elections every week. And we have theorized for a long time that it's actually the state that wants to throw this case out. We want the case to continue. If you watched Harrison Floyd's subpoena hearings, the evidence of election fraud is in this case, in the RICO case. And one of the affirmative defenses is Trump won. And so everything you're saying is a lie. And we really want this. This is the best chance that we have to litigate what happened in 2020 in a court of law with a judge that is willing to hear the evidence and it's already in. And so it was after that subpoena hearing that this Michael Roman motion to disqualify came up in all this conflict. The state, Raffensperger, started backing away from this case. And Fannie Willis is kind of out on a limb. So now she doesn't have her boyfriend,
right?
Or maybe she, you know, maybe she keeps her boyfriend because they can't find another prosecutor. Maybe she keeps her boyfriend and you know, removes herself. Who knows? But the reality
been decided. He resigned.
Yeah, he resigned. He stepped down.
Oh, he did. Okay. I missed that. So there you go. Yeah. So she's got problems. Then the other thing to keep in mind is that there's a current Senate inquiry, Georgia Senate inquiry.
Right.
There's an inquiry into her in the House, and there is a Georgia State Ethics Committee. The Fulton County Ethics punted to the state when that hearing was heard. Right. And so there is. So Fannie Willis still has a lot of problems. And if those other inquiries turn up other evidence, that may be admissible down the road. The judge has left a lot of those doors open. But the most important thing is that the Fulton County election fraud, the suitcases of ballots, the fact that they didn't do signature verification, the fact that they didn't use the machines that they paid $1 million for to do the signature, all of that is already in evidence. And all this disqualification stuff came up directly after that.
They don't want
to try this case.
You're way smarter than me.
I'll go the other way. It was a revolting decision.
Well, it was a revolting decision by
a cowardly judge who had contributed to Fannie Willis's campaign, had worked for Fannie Willis, and just got an opponent for the fall when he has to
work for Fannie Willis. He worked for the DA's office before she was the DA.
No, but at the time, she also worked for Fannie Willis. And everybody said, that's good, because he knows what an idiot she is. He was a disgrace. To take all that evidence in, all the lying, mendacity, have her conduct, have the going to the church, and then decide, it's all Wade's fault. And then he goes, oh, no, but I can't just blame it on Wade. I know. I'll give them a Solomon choice. They can either fire fire him. And of course, he knew that he'd be gone. And so everybody's happy. It was a disgusting decision by a corrupt, dishonest judge. And if they don't want to have, you know, you're still going for an incredibly biased jury. And who cares what the evidence is? Donald Trump is guilty as long as you have the right jury, just like all the J6 people were guilty.
But I think, though, Ash, and I hadn't thought of your point, because what you're saying is, and this is the trouble with all of the lawfare cases, is that they are based on either nothing or they're based on lies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think they were hoping all along that Donald Trump would cave or give in somehow, right? And the best thing to go forward, as you kind of know from some of your stuff, is if you say, okay, prove it then, because I know you can.
All right. So you have Gene Carroll case, right?
Right. In New York.
30 years ago, I remember him coming in a Bergdorf garment or something and raping me. Yeah. That's it. Okay. Ridiculous on his face. Pathetic. And they decide, okay, it wasn't rape, but, you know, let's give her some money. And then now it's $83 million, 84, 86, 100. You know, they got to present all the pathetic evidence. But still, the jury, guilty.
But guilty. But what I think happens too, though, kind of like with the Fannie Wade thing, because I'm kind of with you in that I don't think this judge was ever going to throw it out. He's got to get elected again in Fulton County, right? But I think the PR battle is definitely being won by the Trump people, right?
Well, the judicial system is not coming out ahead. The PR. I mean, you watch this cowardly judge go, oh man, that Fannie could be mean.
That's, I mean, to watch Fannie Willis, you're like, this woman is doing this. So,
Now there's no lack of finding, you know, the lawfare people. It's just call Washington. Get me somebody decent. Oh, sure. Here you go.
But you
have to have sex with Fanny. But other than that, it pays
you. Well, you have to take vacations with her.
You have to pay for those vacations.
Vodka, not wine. Just so you can go. Try to do too.
Get her some Grey Goose for those little romantic moments.
Go with Tito's.
That gives you the fog over the eye.
Yeah, I mean, that's the majority opinion, is that the judge is a coward and he split the baby in a way that was beneficial to the Democrats. I don't see it that way, but I've been following this case. You know, I've watched every hearing in this case going back to the beginning, and it's not just, you know, the level of the affirmative defenses in this case are all of our affirmative defenses, all of our election deniers. This benefits everybody. If the evidence is heard, and I believe it will be now, then that, and this is televised, right? Talking about a televised trial. I think that this goes our way.
Well, both can be true, right? You can have a totally corrupt judge who makes an god awful.
He's not corrupt, but he's just pathetic.
But cowardly decision. Though, moving forward, so you're just saying the good news is there's reason to hope, because as this goes forward now, some of this evidence, and Fannie Willis, I'm sure, I mean, this would have all gone away if she had just recused herself. I don't get the sense, is bright enough to figure any of this out.
Now she'll get somebody. Yeah. Who is bright enough?
No, she's going to have Mary McCord, right? From the Department of Justice.
Yeah, sure.
Who's the one that she was meeting with.
That's right. And okay, it's lesbianism, but she's going to have to do Fanny like all of them do.
It's diversity, Chuck. It's
table stakes. You don't get the job unless you're with.
She has her needs. She has her needs.
But the Department of Justice is scrambling as always. Hey, listen, Ash, we have Scott Bottoms coming up next. We want to get to him. Where you've been great as always. People can read you at the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. Once more, where you're all over the place, but where can
you? Yeah, well, my column this month is America First is winning COPE commies. So, all the commies can cope, and we are winning. I think that it's more obvious now than ever. Everybody can find my stuff at linktree.com/AshInAmerica, Ash with an E. Thanks all for having me.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It was great to see you. Have a great week, and hope you guys can dig out too. I saw you got a lot of snow as well.
We have a lot of snow. Yeah.
All right.
We're going to dinner no matter what, though, right?
We are. It's Party Friday. All right. Thank you, Ash.
Rev on top of the car and head out.
There's a ton of, you guys have had a ton of comments. And Ash, everybody loves you. They're saying Ash is fantastic. You know, I hadn't thought about what Ash said because I had not followed that. I mean, loosely I'd followed it, but there is a ton of evidence. Although, as you say, the flip side of that is when you see what's happening in New York, you quickly understand that. You know, that evidence
in the 20s with an all-white jury. Oh, okay. We're all got the evidence, huh?
But I
didn't kill anybody. No, we can't have that.
But I go back to, though, sort of the PR battle. I mean, I think all of this fuels in its own way. It's boomerang because it's helping Trump, right? I mean,
it's destroying the judicial system. After anybody watched that hearing and said, oh, yeah, Fannie Willis should help. She's got to continue.
I mean, they still quote old polls that say, well, if Trump is convicted of even one felony, people might not vote for him. I think that gets less and less and less every day. You know, the more you see this stuff. Okay, we've got Scott Bottoms in the Zoom room. Thank you, Thomas. Hey, Scott, are you there? I see you.
There he is. Yay.
Hey, thank you. Representative Scott Bottoms from Colorado Springs. You've been doing a great job at the Colorado legislature. Against enormous odds. So
And with traitorous cohorts and the Republican Party.
So thank you for your time. Appreciate it today.
Well, thank you for having me. That was a very valid introduction. You know, I do think I'm doing stuff, right? I would be remiss to say that, but it just doesn't always feel like that because we are fighting such huge odds. And this isn't like Democrats as usual mentality where we're discussing taxes back and forth and bigger, smaller government. This is complete out of the box attack on children, overreach, not like normal Democrat overreach, but Marxist overreach. And in fact, even some of the stuff that I can explain about the charter school bill, it's just control. And so every day you're going in there thinking, what little difference can I make today?
Yeah. Well, talk about the charter school thing.
And also maybe the introductory, we're all told that our beloved governor is a huge supporter of charter schools. Not so much.
Okay. So there's always two sides to the way things are presented in politics, right? Okay. Governor Polis makes himself out to be a libertarian. Makes himself out to be, which kind of means, you know, get government away from things, get government out of the way. That's basically what libertarian means. No government, almost anarchy, right? And but he's not libertarian. He's as liberal as the most liberal Democrat in that House. And this is the most liberal Democrat House that has ever existed.
Yes.
They have declared war on so many things, and they've told us, they've made it clear, they want to be the most progressive, the most liberal House of Representatives in the entire nation. Well, the charter school thing is just another piece of this puzzle. Governor Polis has systematically, and I can name a bunch of things to prove this, but he has systematically gone after anything that is not under his control. He even took over the ag department and had the Democrats run a bill that now he is in charge of the ag department, and he'll appoint a leader to the ag department and the board. Well, it used to be a voted in position. It used to be bipartisan, all this kind of stuff. Now the government, he says, no, I'll run that one too. And you can just go down the line and list them all. Well, charter schools are just one of those things. He does not want people to be in charge of anything that he's not ultimately the authority over. This is totalitarian regime mentality. And he's going after charter schools because charter schools don't agree with his philosophies. And if you don't agree with his philosophies, rather than debate that out and process that, he'll just come after it, take it over, and then he'll make it do what he wants it to do. And that's what this bill on charter schools is going to do.
Well, let me explain how it's going to do it.
Because
we have a son, just for the records of folks. No, we have a son in charter school, the Academy of Charter Schools.
It's a great charter school.
In Westminster, it's a great charter
school. Maybe it won't be, but it was.
Understanding, too. It's not like the bill says, Governor Polis takes over charter schools, vote yes or no. But it's like death by a thousand kind of paper cuts, right? It's all of this stuff that gives him or the Democrats control. So why don't you kind of, I know I don't want to get too in the weeds, but can you walk us through it?
That's what this program's about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll try to let me explain this a few details at a time, and we can break it up into more detailed as you want. Okay. Like into the weeds. Here's one of the biggest things is these are like the major provisions that should be that have always been part of charter school mentalities, right? Charter schools can have their own waivers, right? This will automatically remove waivers. This bill will.
Waivers for what? Waivers for what kind of things?
Okay, waivers. Let me give you a few waivers from over the last few years that are actually in statute. They can set national holidays. They can local board concerning selection of staff and pay. These are all for charter school mentalities. Determine education program. This is actually one of the biggest ones. Okay, this is the one to write down. Is determine educational program and prescribed textbooks.
Oh.
The charter schools will have that waiver taken away. So in other words, the all-consuming Marxist nanny state will now be deciding what textbooks. And what's the biggest fight we're having in school boards all over the state
textbooks.
Right now? Is textbooks, either CRT, right. SEL, some kind of inclusion of a DEI mentality that's
right,
going to
be right.
Or even some of these pornographic mentalities that people are putting all over the state right now to get out of our schools. Well, now the charter schools won't be able to make their own decisions because, you know, they're not smart enough.
So what you're saying is what they're doing is they're being tricky. They're going to say, okay, you can call it a charter school if you want, but we're going to take away all the things that make a charter school. And we're going to put everything under control of the government and the governor.
Yeah. Right. And I can, let me show you. Yeah. how extreme I am. Okay.
Okay.
I don't think there should be a Department of Education at the federal level or the state level. I think that is the most destructive thing that we have ever done to our children, is make some kind of federal run controlled. We're going to tell you what to do, Department of Education. It's horrible. It was designed originally as a Marxist organization, and the states are the crazy states like our state. We're trying to push it under some kind of control.
Yeah. Well, and so is this going to, so what you're saying is POLIS, because this gives him control, so he's happy to have, so he's going to, where we were thinking, oh, well, maybe we could count on him because he's been in favor of charter schools. We cannot count on him in this one.
He's not in favor of charter schools. He's never been in favor of charter schools. He says he is because he wants to be elected president. Look at the past history. Okay, some people don't understand. Let me explain how it works in the House of Representatives. POLIS controls the Democrats in the House of Representatives. We have watched him send his number one guy in, pull a Democrat out that's kind of starting to act like they have their own thoughts. And he'll pull them out, and they'll be gone for an hour, and then all of a sudden they come back, and they're fixed. The ship is righted, and they vote the way that they're supposed to.
Wow.
He threatens their elections. He threatens everything. And this is not something that I think maybe Democrats have explained this to us.
Wow.
Democrats that now they can't tell you who they are, but they have explained, if I don't vote yes on this bill or no on this bill, I won't get elected. They don't mean from their constituents. They mean the governor down will make sure they are not in the position to get elected.
Wow. Well, what about with the charter schools? And is there any hope? Or because I know, you know, we get emails, and I know you guys are fighting for it, because to me, this is crucial, right? Because a lot of it starts with education. And, well, I mean, everybody knows the importance of that. Is there hope, or are they going to be able to ram this through, or can make amendments, or are we doomed?
Well, okay, so we could try to make some amendments. Here's the thing that happens is the only thing that's going to pass, whether it be amendments in the bill and everything else, is what the Democrats say is going to pass. Okay, we are making the most liberal laws right now when it comes to children, parents, and schools. We just took parents' rights away in a bill, 1039, 2 weeks ago, that basically said parents do not have the right to know what's going on with their children, and the teachers will be fired if they tell parents.
Right.
Okay. This same body is going to be voting on this charter school bill. There's no way they're going to let any conservative mentality, even a middle of the road mentality, pass. These people are intentionally, actively going after parents and children. And we can try to get an amendment, but there's 19 of us. And even if all the Republicans are together, which I think they would be on this bill, even if all the Republicans are together, we need about 15 more votes to break through.
Yeah. Senate, is it going to go through the Senate?
So last session, the Senate was our saving grace. Okay. The Senate, and this is a House bill, so it'll go to the House first. And then the Senate actually last session, specifically on some of the Second Amendment and actually parents' rights, two bills I can remember specifically that the Senate blocked the bill and did not pass it because it was so aggressive on parents' rights, taking away parents' rights. Okay. And one of them, they amended it so it gave the rights back to the parents.
Okay.
I don't know. It's hard to say because sometimes the Senate does really well. And then sometimes they don't. Sometimes the Republicans make a strong fight, and then sometimes it's two or three Republicans make a strong fight. I do hope the Senate, there's no way we're going to stop it. We can't. We don't have the votes. Okay. But we can sure make a big argument and give a bunch of reasons for constituents to call senators and say, hey.
And what you do, that's great. And I mean, and please don't, I know it must be discouraged, but don't get discouraged. I mean, you guys are doing a great job of getting the word out. Right. And at least people are known. Let me switch now to Second Amendment. I was reading a thing where I forget, was it maybe in the Colorado Sun or someplace where they were talking to Democrats and they're like, yeah, a few years ago, you know, gun Second Amendment was kryptonite because of the recalls. It's not anymore. We don't care. There's nothing stopping us. They have what?
You can't have a gun in your car. What's that?
You have like 10 different anti-Second Amendment bills up there. Or is that just this week?
Feels like it. No, there's 12 that they've brought that we know that are coming. Some have already come through committee. We actually voted on one last week. This one was the one that appeared to be innocuous, but it wasn't. It was basically saying that if you're going to be a concealed carry, you're going to have a concealed carry permit, that you have to go through all of this training. I'm not anti-training. I'm also the pastor of a church. We train our safety team. We do a bunch of stuff like that, okay? So I'm obviously pro-training, educate the people, know what's going on. But the problem is the Second Amendment says you cannot infringe upon this right, okay? If you make a bunch of requirements to get a concealed carry permit, let me give you the first requirement, that you have to have a permit. That's a requirement that is infringing upon the right to bear arms. So that's already wrong. Then when they say, okay, to get that permit, let's add some more stuff. And they added two or three things to it. Well, like I said, on the floor, you may call it safety measures, training. You can call it whatever you want, but there's actually one term that the Constitution uses. It's called infringement.
Right.
You're not allowed to infringe upon the Second Amendment. And does it matter? All these other things that they've done with three-day rules and this safety thing and storage issues, the one that you just mentioned, they're saying now this is going to be a bill that we're going to debate on. They're saying that to have a weapon, a gun, anything in your car, you have to have it locked up in a gun safe in your car. Okay. Now, it's already a law that your car is considered an extenuation of your home.
Oh.
So you can already have a weapon in your car because it's considered in your home. That's issue, insurance issues and everything. But now they're saying, no, we're going to make another rule here. They're doing the bill that says that you can't have a concealed carry in sensitive spaces. That one's coming up.
What's a sensitive space?
Well, they put a few criteria to the sensitive space, but it really is so ambiguous. They're basically just going to say, oh, we think that's a sensitive space, and now you can't conceal carry there. But churches are actually mentioned. And I will remind them, I'm the pastor of a church. You cannot make me. I mentioned in the First Amendment, the church is actually mentioned in the First Amendment. And the Second Amendment says no infringement. So now I've got two constitutional, the first two most important constitutional issues. And I've told them, I am not going to stop anybody from carrying in my church. It is not the government's business. It's also no one else's business. This is not okay.
Well, the whole thing is, it's aimed at just making it so difficult to have that. Well, but I mean, those are going to, the Democrats, like I said, in this article, were being like, yeah, we can ram through whatever we want, and we're going to ram through as much as we can. I'm assuming you guys can't stop those either.
We can't stop those again in the House. Okay.
In the House.
They may stop in the Senate. Well, here's an interesting thing that happened. We have another bill coming up. It's a recreate of a bill from last year, and it's just basically a ban on all weapons. They call it an assault weapons ban. But here's the interesting thing about that. There's no such thing as an assault weapon.
Right.
You go into a gun store and say, hey, give me an assault weapon. There is not that thing. And many of the Democrats have got up over just since I've been there. And said things, well, you know, like those assault rifles, AR-15, assault rifle 15. Well, AR doesn't stand for assault. It is a manufacturer of a type of platform for a weapon. Now, here's the crazy thing about this. We can't stop some of this, but this assault weapons ban is what they're calling it. That's going to come forward. It's the exact same law that Representative Epps presented last year. She's presenting it again this year. The governor actually made sure that one got shot down in committee because he did not want to have to be the guy to either sign it or veto it. Because if he signs it, he'll never be president.
Right.
And he knows that. If he vetoes it, he loses a lot of his base.
That's a good point. Well, what about, because we only have a few more minutes, what, anything else, because you've done a great job, like I said, of exposing what they're doing with kids and parents, anything else coming up that people need to be aware of? so we can,
so they can go to sleep at night,
to Texas or something. No.
Well, I tell you, speaking of that, I've got my oldest son lives in Texas and my only two grandchildren live in Texas. And we joke with them all the time. He's a family life pastor at a church, and we joke about we'd love to have them in Colorado, But I can tell you right now, I don't want my grandkids going to public schools in Colorado. And if this bill, this charter school bill passes, I don't want them going to charter schools in Colorado.
There won't be any difference between
no,
a charter
it will
school
not
and
be
public
any different. And this is the thing, and I'm not picking on charter schools, but when you buy into the government and you take the money from the government, eventually they will own you. Right. And that's what's happening here.
What about then? Well, then, okay, so they're going to take over the charter schools. That's a very good point. Private schools?
Private schools are next. I don't know how. I mean, they're going to get it done. Only thing they have to do is just say there's no such thing as a private school. It has to all be regulated by the state. I mean, they can do anything they want. They're going to come after homeschooling, too. Because why? Yeah. Homeschooling is becoming one of the most powerful demographics
right
within the state of Colorado right now.
Right.
I'm just telling you, the Democrats have declared war on your children. Sexually, that's first. Any kind of rights, they're trying to groom our children. They're trying to make sure that they control what our children are. There is, and I don't know how many people that are listening to you have a spiritual or religious mentality, but this is demonic. Satan is trying to control and destroy our children and take an entire generation and then the generations to follow. And people better wake up, because Colorado, we're losing our kids.
Wow. All right. Well, Scott, thank you for that. And thank you for fighting there. Please know that out here, maybe if it doesn't even feel like it some days, we are all behind you. And we so appreciate, I mean, you know, we appreciate what you do up there. And at the very least, you know, I'm a firm believer you'd keep shining a light, yeah. You know, and people are waking up. So.
Well, Jordan.
You know, Chuck was going to say something depressing. So we won. It's Party Friday.
I mean, there's a reason why there's been no statewide Republican election since 2016, because ballot harvesting started in 2017.
Yeah.
And it's not the Dick Wadhams 800,000 people arriving from hell to Colorado. It's really a fairly close, it's probably, you know, 5, 6, 7 points difference, which means in a good year, Republicans could win, but they'll never win one side ballot harvest and the other doesn't. And even if we ballot harvest, it's so much easier to ballot harvest in the big cities. So we've got to,
but
we have to get Dick Wadhams back on telling us, oh no, I could, you know, this is just a great
system. I could win, right.
Yeah. It's a gold standard. And I mean, you know, when did the devil get a hold of them?
Yeah. Hey, Scott, thank you so much. Thank you for fighting the good fight down there too.
Guys, thank you for what you do. You're awesome.
All right, thank you. All right, Representative Scott Bottoms there. Well, that's kind of depressing about charter schools. Yeah, it's time for Party
Friday. Hey, Rev, we're going to explain to you how screwed you're going to be next year.
I heard of this term. I guess I'm the only person in America who had not heard of this term, but you had. And so Greg Gutfeld, we're going to play a Greg Gutfeld. It's not particularly funny, but it is particularly pertinent, and it is reason to hope. But have you guys heard of the term the offals? What is it? Affluent, white, female urban liberals are what's destroying the Democrat Party. And that's why all the men are, I never heard of it. The Democrat, he said, has become the party of the awfuls. If we could please play the Greg Gutfeld soundbite, Thomas.
Fleeing the Democratic Party like it's a showing of Barbie. It's because it's terrifying to them that they're becoming the party of awfuls, right? Affluent, white, female liberals. The Democratic Party has become like almost like a political version of the Bud Light commercial with Dylan Mulvaney. They've alienated men in order to please miserable activists. And men are like, hey, we know when we're not wanted. We'll see ourselves out. We know what a woman is, right? We know what's best for our kids. We know what it takes to protect our cities and our families. And we're tired of apologizing for laughing at funny jokes and at having natural testosterone, right?
So, and he's right on that, right? That's why the Democratic Party—they're fleeing. Men are fleeing it, and you know, intelligent women are too.
Well, they had Tucker Carlson had Carlson on, had Cuomo on, and he's describing how Chris Cuomo, how he never had a black or other minority scream at him, "You're a racist." It's all female attorneys who are 33 years old. Yeah. You're a racist!
So, hey, there is hope.
There is hope for that happiness.
The Democrat is the party of the awfuls. Now, they may embrace it. They want. They'll probably try to sue us, and they'll call the manager for calling him that. But hey, that's going to do it. Hey, but to cheer people up a little bit, on Monday we're going to have Jeffrey Katz on. He's a historian, and he has a new book out from a historical perspective, How to Live a Wonderful Life. So we'll be talking about
Notwithstanding
the awfuls. Everybody, thank you to Scott Bottoms and to and Ash. Thanks to all the great comments there. The great guys.
Thanks to all our awful listeners. We don't have any.
Oh, they are the awful people.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's Party Friday.
Yay!
We finally dug out. We will see you all on Monday.
Bye-bye.